You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
One Pills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, hour number two on a Friday can only mean one thing. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, joined now by senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, and Greg's weekly segment presented by Scott Lawnyard, an official commercial site work partner of the Buffalo Bills. All right, we got a big one in prime time here, Greg, and both teams trying to come off back-to-back losses and end their respective losing streaks. Both quarterbacks also struggling of late. So, I don't know. It's the classic something's got to give here, Greg. Who fixes their problems first?
Well, you know, it's funny, Brownie. I kept hearing that Josh Allen's a turnover machine. He hasn't thrown any interceptions, right?
That's correct.
There you go. So yeah,
we could, you know, give me the turnover, Josh, and 4-1 instead of 3-2, right?
Right. Exactly. Well, where do you want to start, Brownie?
I would say both quarterbacks have struggled against the blitz of late, which is kind of interesting. Josh usually feasts on teams that blitz him. I can't pretend to know Aaron's full history against the blitz, but I would tend to think it's not with it's a passer good. Rating of about 54, which is what it was last week. So maybe explain what is plaguing these two quarterbacks who typically do well in blitz situations.
Well, let's start with Rodgers, because the team he played last week, the Minnesota Vikings, and the Bills' defense is really nothing like the Vikings' defense. Maybe they'll take a piece here and there because it was effective, but the Vikings could well be the toughest defense in the NFL to play against because of what they do pre-snap and then what happens post-snap. So they're really difficult. They line up in a lot of 6- and 7-man fronts, sometimes 8-man fronts. You obviously have to protect it when you see that. So very often you're forced to keep a back or a tight end or both in to protect. And then often they'll drop out and rush three, and you get kind of stuck. So the team that the Jets just played is not really a barometer of what the Jets are likely to see from the Bills' defense, but it's certainly one reason why Rodgers struggled. And you certainly, as great a pure thrower as Rodgers is, you certainly don't want him dropping back 55 times in a game. I mean, his lower body is not what it was in terms of his movement ability. So, you know, I think that that's a little bit of an issue for him right now. On the other side, I think the issues with the Bills' offense go beyond just the blitz, guys. You know, when I watched that tape, and as you know, I studied the Bills in great detail, one of the things that really stands out to me, and to be honest, you know, if I can be honest, I think this is really an offensive coordinator issue, although Josh has a part to play in this as well. There's not really an intermediate passing game in the Bills' offense right now. And I think that's as much of a scheme issue as it is a quarterback issue. And I thought, you know, we both know that Josh always walks a fine line between playing from the pocket effectively and getting out of the pocket prematurely. And I thought last week he stepped over that line. But I think that they need to have an intermediate passing game that is schematic, not just where it's one-on-one. I mean, you look at some of these other teams in the league that have really good pass games, like the Lions, and all that is schematic. And I think you're trying to define the reads and the throws for Josh Allen as cleanly as you possibly can. So, you know, to me, I think that's where some of it starts. And then Josh clearly, you know, has to slow down. I thought last week he played way too fast mentally. I thought it resulted in too much unnecessary movement. There were a few clean throws that were there that he did not process. And then his ball placement last week wasn't, you know, what it normally is. So, you know, I think there's a number of issues, and, you know, they can be cleaned up, obviously, but we'll see. They're playing a pretty tough defense. The Jets have a very good defense, and they rush the quarterback very, very well.
Let's talk a little bit about one of the narratives that's coming around the Bills, and because of the way the Bills entered the season with the kind of weapons they have on the outside, people are saying, well, it got to be those guys outside. They're not getting separation, that kind of stuff. And you know, now teams are starting to blitz Josh a lot, play a lot more man against the Bills than other teams. Kind of delve into what all that means.
Yeah, that's a great point, because when you do blitz, obviously there are man blitzes and there are zone blitzes. So teams will man blitz more now, because what that means is they'll match up man to man on the receivers and they'll force them to have to run good routes and at least give Josh Allen a place to throw the football. And if they can't win at all, and win is a relative term, obviously we're not talking about 5 yards of separation in the NFL, but I mean just win enough that Josh feels comfortable delivering the football, then, you know, that's obviously what needs to happen. But I think you'll see more pressure and you'll see more man coverage, because until you can beat it, you're going to get it. And, you know, and obviously Josh is the kind of quarterback that when he sees opposing jersey color, he tends to move. And, you know, sometimes you know exactly how he's going to move and you can react to that effectively as a defense. I mean, probably, I certainly don't have numbers in front of me. This is what teams do when they have 20 people that can watch tape. But my guess is 95% of the time he's going to move to his right. And teams know that. And therefore, they can then defend that as well. They can sort of force him to move, knowing where he'll move, and be in position to defend that.
Right. And that is why they're struggling as much as they are on third down as well. This is a team that led the league in third down conversion percentage each of the last 2 years. And this has been a problem since week one. I mean, they are now 25th in the league in third down conversion rate. And two-thirds of the time, they're facing third and six or more this season. I mean, there's only one. The Jacksonville game is the only game where they had more than three third down conversions in any one game. It was also the only time they were over like 33% conversion rate. I realize that a lot of that is baked into what happens on first and second down, but even on the money down, they're not executing. It's kind of eye opening, and I'll admit it, I'm troubled by it.
Yeah, no, it's a definite concern. I mean, just following up on sort of what I was saying, one thing you're not seeing much of at all is kind of, by NFL standards, relatively easy throws. Everything seems to be hard. Wouldn't you agree, Brownie?
Since week three, yes.
Yeah. You're the play-by-play guy, so you're seeing all the games, you know, up close and personal. You know, everything seems to be a struggle. There don't seem to be any dropbacks where you see Josh drop back, hit a receiver who's, you know, as I said, by NFL standards, relatively open. It just nothing seems comfortable. You know, I know we've spent a lot of time, all of us, and believe me, I'm a believer that there has to be some semblance of balance in an offense. Again, balance is another one of those relative terms depending on your specific offense. But, you know, sometimes I wonder if, hey, maybe we need to kind of let Josh get comfortable and do the things he's comfortable doing. And as you joked, but you weren't really joking, I don't think, if that means, or Steve, you might have said it, if that means he throws a pick here and there, you know what? So be it. But let him be comfortable playing the game, because right now everything seems hard.
The Bills have also, and Brownie brought this up early in the week, and certainly it was a function of how that game went in Houston, but they've run the ball on 20 out of 26 first downs. Their run game has become really a massive part of what they do offensively.
No question.
Speak to that a little bit. Plus, with James Cook questionable, and we don't know what his status is going to be this week because of a toe injury, you know, how that affects things. And what do you think the Bills' run game, first of all, what do you think it means for the passing game and Josh? And secondly, what about this Jet defense stopping it?
Well, again, you know, maybe if Joe Brady was here, he'd tell me I'm wrong. But my sense is there's not as much of a marriage between the run game and the play action pass game as I personally feel I'd like to see. Now, again, maybe I'm wrong, but I, you know, I've watched a lot of tape in my time, and I feel that if you're going to run the ball with the commitment that they've shown, I mean, even last week in a game that they fell behind, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Cook end up with 20 carries? I think he had 20 carries.
Yes, he did, 20 for 82.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've been committed to running the football, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think now you have to work off that. And, you know, another thing that I think they sort of have to, in my mind, again, I'm just giving you my point of view. You know, reasonable people can disagree, but my point of view, I think they need to reassess the extensive use of six O-line personnel. I think they need to develop a pass game that is more multiple, that is more schematic. Maybe they're working toward that. Obviously, they've got new receivers this year. This stuff does take time. Believe me, I know that. I've been doing this a long time. You know, people like to think everything happens in 2 days. It doesn't happen that way. But, you know, I think that that's what they have to be working toward. They have to be working toward a situation, particularly against zone coverage. They're not going to get man on every snap, where the route concepts can defeat the coverage and you get clean throws for your quarterback. You don't see many of those in their offense, certainly not in the last number of weeks. And even in the early weeks, I didn't think that that was the way they were scoring with, you know, just clean throws all the time. I think that's what they need to work toward. But the run game they're clearly committed to, that's fine. But now you need something off that.
Yeah. Keon Coleman has obviously flashed with limited opportunities with the football. Do you think, even in his young and raw state, that it has merited more opportunities for him going forward? Would you get him? Would you try to target him maybe a little more in the scope of your game plan, if possible?
I would. I mean, again, I'm not there every day, Brownie, you know, and you guys are there in the building. You know, I don't know what kind of information you guys get, so I don't know what he's doing in practice every day. I don't know what his development is like. But you're dealing with a 6'3 kid who moves pretty well. You would think that you could get him more involved in your pass game. But that's a function of what he's doing during the week, whether he's making mistakes, whether he's running wrong routes. I don't know the answer to those questions. But yes, just as a general point of view, for sure, you'd like to see him more involved. And, you know, you hear a lot about, well, developing chemistry. I think that that's something that you can deal with schematically, you know, particularly against zone. I mean, all these receivers, by the time they get to the NFL, they've run every route known to man. So it's not as if they don't know what the routes are. It's how you put all this together in the context of a multi-dimensional pass game.
I'd like to take a minute and talk about the Bills' defense against Aaron Rodgers. This is the Aaron Rodgers that the Jets get with a healed up Achilles. He does not extend plays the way he once did.
Has the ankle injury.
The ball's coming out. And if it doesn't, he's going down, and he's gone down hard a couple of times. How do teams historically handle quarterbacks who don't move, limited in their athleticism?
Well, you pretty much know where he's going to be. You know, he's not going to move a whole lot. They're playing the last couple of weeks the rookie right tackle, Olu Fashanu, who has really, really struggled in pass protection. And I think you've got to attack that. I think you have to attack it with Rousseau one-on-one. I think you have to attack it with stunts. You have to make Fashanu play the game. He's shown some of the same concerns he had on his college tape at Penn State. He's got core stiffness in his kick slide and his pass set. He reaches and lunges. He's got balance and body control issues. That's an area you have got to attack. And keep in mind, that's the side Aaron Rodgers can see. And when quarterbacks are uncomfortable, as he has been, they tend to overreact to opposing jersey color. So you want to make sure that that's an area in which you attack. I thought it was really interesting last week, for the first time this year, in their dime front, they had Solomon and Rousseau on the outside. They brought Smoot inside. So, you know, I think we'll probably see more of that. But, yeah, I think that's one area they have to attack. They've got to make Rodgers feel uncomfortable. I don't think he's overly comfortable with his receivers either. And Rodgers is a quarterback that's always thrown to one-on-ones, and he expects his receivers to win. And that is the NFL, where if it's man-to-man, you expect your receivers to win. And they've not been winning. So, you know, I think obviously the Bills are not a high percentage cover one defense relative to the rest of the NFL. I doubt that's going to change dramatically. That's been Sean McDermott's MO. But you've got to make Aaron Rodgers feel, continue to feel uncomfortable.
One of the things that has been a little bit of a surprise this year and a pleasant surprise for the Bills has been the play of Christian Benford.
Yeah.
He has been really tough to beat one-on-one. So if Rodgers doesn't like throwing to receivers who are covered in one-on-one, you know, they could the Bills, and I know Rasul Douglas is on the other side. He's a heady, very veteran, smart player who takes some chances once in a while.
Sure, and he's not a press man guy. He's more of an off-coverage.
That's right.
Cluer and
yeah, he's an eyes in the backfield kind of corner, even if he's in man coverage. So, yeah, how does that mesh with what the Jets want to do offensively and Aaron Rodgers and what he wants to do?
I mean, theoretically, it probably helps Rodgers because you're not going to get a lot of press at the line of scrimmage, and maybe, you know, you're going to get more free access into the routes, and maybe it's cleaner for him. So, you know, the key to me is pass rush. Now, obviously, the Bills are not a huge blitzing team either, and I'm not sure you want to do that. But you're going to have to generate at least pressure. I mean, you know, it's funny. I watched the 49ers tape from last night already, and they didn't get a sack, but Nick Bosa had like 15 pressures. He was around the quarterback literally every time Geno Smith dropped back. That's what you'd have to do in this game. It's not number of sacks. It's making Rodgers feel uncomfortable. Because no matter how great a quarterback is, and we all know he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, maybe the purest throw of a football we've ever seen, no quarterback likes people around him. That's just the nature of the position. Except maybe your guy, Jim Kelly, Steve, who told me once, I love taking that first shot early in the first quarter, but he was a little nuts, as you know. But but you know, no quarterback likes a lot of bodies around him, and Rodgers certainly doesn't at this point in his career.
Looks like it's trending anyway that Taron Johnson could be back in the lineup this week for the first time since week one. How does that kind of impact Buffalo's front seven there, knowing he's up at the line of scrimmage a great deal? And look, for the first time since week one, the second level of Buffalo's defense is back to what it was week one.
Yeah, let me ask you this. If Taron Johnson is back, does Cam Lewis sit or does he become a safety?
I think no, because Taylor Rapp's out of concussion protocol. So I would presume it's I would presume it's Rapp and Hamlin on the back end, and I think Cam Lewis becomes your third dime safety.
So he would play then instead of Ingram then?
Yes.
Okay. Well, just to talk about some positives, I thought Dorian Williams played his best game as a pro last week. I know they lost, but I thought he played his best game as a pro. I don't know what your thoughts were, but I thought he really played good football last week. And I also thought Bernard's interception was as good a defensive play as you'll see by a linebacker, because you guys, you know, I know people can't see it right now, but you know, he obviously started to carry the interior route by Schultz, and then out of the corner of his eye did a beautiful job of recognizing, I think it was Diggs. Was it Diggs who the ball was thrown to?
Yeah. He dropped coverage and went back and got back in the throwing lane.
But it was just awareness. That was a Luke Kuechly kind of play. That was an awareness.
Yeah, it was totally preparation and film study. He knew the second crosser was coming, and not only did he turn and spin, he got airborne and caught the ball. All of that in less than a half a second. It was a fantastic play, and we raved about it the next day as well. That's why you want your best players on the field, because they make plays like that.
No, you're exactly right. It was as good as it gets. And like I said, I thought Williams played really well. So, you know, defensively, look, the Jets have not been able to run the ball very well, and that's another key thing, because as good as Rodgers is and has been in his career, as we said, you really – don't want him. I mean, if you're the Jets, you don't want him dropping back 50 times. So you've got to make sure you shut down their run game and then really get bodies around Rodgers. That's critical. Yeah. And like I said, I think you've got to really attack the right side of the Jets' offensive line. I think you've got to see what Fasciano can do. He's not been very good in his two starts.
Yeah. Quickly before we let you go, what kind, you're expecting Todd Downing as the new play caller to really kind of stick with the run as long as he can.
Yeah.
But what have been the shortcomings in the Jets' run game from what you've seen on tape? Is it linemen not getting to the second level? Is it something? What do you think it is primarily?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's usually no magic, as you guys know, when you can't run the ball. It's because your O-line is not either winning one-on-one blocks or they're struggling with the combo blocks working to the second level. It's what really one of those two things. I mean, and it's not – the Jets' O-line has not been as good as they hoped, given the fact that they, you know, signed Tyron Smith, they signed
Morgan
Simpson,
Moses.
You know, I mean, it just hasn't been as good as they've hoped up to this point.
Okay. Greg, thanks. Appreciate you. It's good to see you again.
I hope we talk about a win next week, guys.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
You're
with you on that one. Thanks, Greg. Okay. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. That's senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joining us. And, you know, he was talking about Nick Bosa's pressure last night on Geno Smith. Greg Rousseau had a good game last week. I mean, he didn't have any sacks, but he had 6 quarterback pressures in the game, and I think he had 2 quarterback hits. I mean, he was around C.J. Stroud a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If Morgan Moses can't get back from his knee injury and play right tackle, and it's Fasciano again, Greg Rousseau has to have a week one performance that he did when he...
They will have a plan for that. The Jets will put a guy out there to chip.
Tight end.
They'll run a back over there. They'll do something to help the guy out. The Bills can counter that as well with an outside, you know, bring a corner off of that edge. And soak up that guy and get a one-on-one. Plus, you can take Carter at the defensive tackle or whoever it may be, Daquan Jones, whoever is in there, and Ed Oliver as well, stunt those guys down hard inside to create space between the tackle and guard. And then you've got an up-and-under option for a guy like that as well. So there's a lot of things you can do defensively, and obviously there's an offensive answer for most of it if you get it right on the right play. Sooner or later, though, the guy will be singled up, and you got to win. You got to win.
Right. And that's why I want to see maybe a few more opportunities for Keon Coleman in this game. I mean, the guy is 4th in the league in yards per reception because he's making big plays, but he's not getting a lot of chances to do it. So let's give him more and see what happens.
Let's feed him a little bit. Yeah. No,
I mean, if Shakir's not playing, which is completely up in the air right now, I would even be open to putting him in the slot a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
He played a lot there. He's, you know, in college, it's not like it's unfamiliar to him.
Well, think about it too, because he's a 6'3" dude.
Right.
In the slot, that's a tough matchup.
Right. And on top of that, the Jets' nickel corner, Michael Carter, has not practiced this week due to a back injury. So you're going to be going against Brandon Echols, their backup nickel. So I don't know. I hope they're creative this week.
And it is interesting, too, that most of us feel about play action passing. The thing that Greg said early on is, you know, the Bills run the ball so well and they're committed to it. The reason play action works a lot of times is that your running game, your passing game out of the run game, your play action passes when it looks like a run play but it's a pass play, they need to look identical.
Uh-huh.
At the first half of the play, when the quarterback goes back and fakes a handoff, the offensive line, the running backs, the tight ends, everybody, it needs to look like a run play all the way across the field. And the better you do that, the more successful it is. And right now, there's a little bit of a disconnect, meaning there's not everything's the exact same when you go out of, and, you know, Josh has obviously got to be under center, that kind of stuff as well. And also, the other half of that is, getting, and he said about getting the 6th offensive lineman in. Can you imagine the problems you would give the Jets if you've got Alec Anderson running a corner route, you know, out of that 6th offensive lineman? But they're not going to do that, right?
Right.
So that's why it's a, you know, you got to have a full repertoire of run plays and pass plays out of every formation, every personnel group. When you get into six offensive linemen, nobody's worried about Alec Anderson when you're out in the field catching a pass. Maybe in the red zone, we've seen that, and short yardage. But if it's third and three or third and one, you ain't worried about him.
Yeah. Are you troubled at all by Greg Cosell's comment that the intermediate pass game within the scheme is lacking?
Not so much.
Because it made me think immediately about what Dan Orlovsky told us. Out of 12 personnel, the Bills only have really two pass concepts.
Right. I'm thinking it's being a little bit affected by the amount of man they're getting.
Okay.
And a little bit about Josh. It's either the quick release dump off or it's down the it's the home run shot, you know.
Yeah, there's no in between with him
there's
either.
There's no in between with him either. And I think we're talking about a handful of plays a game. We're not talking about 15, 20 plays a game. We're talking about like five. Two in one quarter and one in each of the other three. It doesn't really bother me too much because there's no doubt they're running some 12 to 15 yard routes. They're just not hitting them. And I think that's part of the – you don't see that as part of the reason people must think, they're not getting separation. Well, sometimes they do and Josh doesn't throw it. Sometimes they don't and Josh has to eat it and throw it someplace else, short or long. And then sometimes they're not there. They're all trying to get to the sticks and curling up.
Yeah.
Who knows? But, that doesn't – because I know in every game they're not. It's not like those plays are not in the repertoire; they are. But they got to call them and they got to execute them.
Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll weigh in with your recipes for Tailgate Friday. What do you got on the menu this week? You'll be letting us know next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
All right, Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good morning, coach. Happy Friday to you.
Good morning, Sal. Happy Friday to you as well.
All right, we are debating here a little bit this morning. You and I are about the same age. I am a Motley Crue fan. That is the Sabres goal song. Were you a Motley Crue listener growing up, coach?
It wasn't at the top of my list, I'd say that, Sal, but I am very aware of some of their songs.
All right, I love that. Okay, coach, obviously today is not a day where you're going to give the official injury designation for the week for guys, but you can obviously tell us if there's anything that you can give us on that. But let's talk about today. No media availability for practice, but you guys obviously will put out an injury report. How does it look for today with some guys?
Yeah, no one will be ruled out today. No updates from yesterday's report, really, and since today is a walkthrough, we'll have to see more what tomorrow looks like.
Okay, let me ask you a couple guys specifically what you've seen from them. What do you think about James Cook, where he is at right now after a couple of days of, well, yesterday officially a missed practice, but on Wednesday when we were out there not doing as much either?
Yeah, I don't know yet. Again, we'll see. You know, I'll get a little bit more of an update from our training staff. It's kind of a walk through Dave for us, like I said, and so you don't really get a good look at what they can and can't do. We'll know more tomorrow.
And then would you say the same thing for Khalil, who looked like he did a little bit more yesterday?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, and then on the guys that were coming back, Taron Johnson sheds the red non-contact jersey. He did a little bit more with the bag. How did you feel he got through the last couple of weeks of practice? Obviously, no game last Sunday for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's knocking some rust off. I thought he did some good things in practice. We'll see. Again, at the end of the day, when you get a player out of practice, that's one thing. Can they function enough to execute the job and the job description is another level. So that's where we're at with all these guys, and they're all in a little bit of a different position on the spectrum, so to speak.
Okay, a lot of people wondering, you know, at the running back room, kind of what you have in addition to James Cook. What have you seen in the growth of Ray Davis so far, Coach? Running, obviously catching the ball out of the backfield, blitz protection for a rookie. He's a guy that's played a lot of college football. He's a little bit more experienced than most college guys coming in. What have you seen from him so far?
Well, he's off to a good start. Limited sample due to limited touches because James has been our primary guy there. So, again, you know, that'll be affected by James's availability. And to this point, because James has not practiced this week, Ray and Ty have both been getting more touches, and I think they've been handling those opportunities well.
Sean, last week on Sunday after the game, you said you talked with Joe Brady after the game about the end of game situation. Then on Monday, we heard you say you guys talked more. I'm very curious, and a lot of fans have asked me, what's it like after a game as far as how you talk with your coaches, when that happens? Do you debrief about every game afterwards and at certain situations? Is it more holistically? And then does it change for a road game or a home game? I'm just curious how the protocol is after a game when you get with your coaches to kind of debrief things that have happened.
Well, it is. I mean, we talk a lot about process here, and, you know, the result sometimes is variable, right? But
yep.
If our process is right, and that's really the root of everything we do. So a lot of the conversations this week were based on that. I would say a week, you know, 2 weeks prior to this, a lot of those process conversations were on the defensive side. And then this past week, certainly a lot of those conversations on the offensive side, and just making sure that we're good. And then from a staff standpoint, communication wise and you know, just situational football wise, making sure again that our process is as airtight as possible. And you know, that's what leads to winning.
You've been on different staffs. Is it different for most staffs of how they kind of treat end of game? Like after you guys come in and you talk, do some coaches say, hey, let's talk in the morning? Do most coaches say, hey, it's top of mind, we better get to it? Whether it's win or lose, whether it's really great or it's not that great, is it different or is it pretty much uniform around the league?
No, I would say it's probably more variable than you'd think. Some mm-hmm. coaches that I've worked around never meet the day after a game. Mm-hmm. Some coaches meet every Monday after a game or whenever that day is. And, you know, some coaches just meet with their leadership group, in this case, the coordinator group. And so it's probably more varied than you'd think because, you know, you'd think that everyone just, hey, after a game, we're going to meet as a full staff on a Monday morning. And some don't do it at all. So it's kind of, you try and read the room and for sure, because everything's a race every week from a time standpoint to get everything done that you need to get done, especially off of a short week, what have you. You get a little bit more time naturally on a longer week that like we're on this week. And so that's the adjustments year to year that take place. That is the journey of the season and how you can help a team, you know, continue to move forward and grow and come together and improve. And I mean, I think that's one of the neat opportunities we have as coaches to do that and to do it well and to do it as quickly as possible to move our team forward.
Look, most of the talk from the guys that I've talked to the last couple of days on the offensive side is, hey, like, we don't have to panic and we don't have to change and scrap everything. We have to be better at what we do, but we also have to kind of examine if there are some tweaks here. What is the balance there of when you have two games like you've had the last couple of weeks to making sure that you don't kind of overreact, but make sure you react accordingly, I guess?
Yeah, that is a delicate balance, and that's been on my mind quite honestly, a lot of this week and leave at night. Hey, did we do enough? Did we touch base enough? Communicate enough? Have those conversations enough? And without overreacting or getting, that become a whatever we're talking about, whatever theme we're talking about, discussing, does that then become the distraction and gets in the way of performance? So it is a delicate balance, but those conversations are important, and really it's where I'm trying to go with my routine week to week, just making sure that, hey, even though my week may not be the same every week, it's more addressing the things that really need to be addressed. It's an interesting, it leads for an interesting and sometimes non-routine based week for me as a head coach.
I remember last year in December, the Chargers had made a coaching change, and we talked about it here on the program and, how you have to kind of be ready for a team that's going to have maybe a little bit more renewed energy, a little bit more renewed focus, maybe because a lot of things are going on in their building. When you see a coaching change like happened with the Jets, is that kind of something you have to be aware of, a little bit of a matching the energy? They're going to be focused. They're going to have a little bit maybe renewed, kind of like I said, focus, I guess, is the word as you go there Monday night.
Could be the case, no doubt. You never know how an opponent is going to show up. Right. We just have to assume every team's going to show up with their best every week because of what the success that we've had, because we have Josh Allen as our quarterback, and in this case, for this reason that you talked about. So, but we have to assume that every week, and knowing that we really can't control that, we have to control the things that are directly within our control, which is our level of preparation, our focus, and then subsequently our level of play.
What is the challenge of a new play caller this late in the process, Todd Downing, who you have faced before? He's been a play caller in the league, but what's the challenge now that your staff faces to making sure that you kind of pivot a little bit from Nathaniel Hackett to Todd Downing and what they may do?
Yeah, again, I mean, outside of our control, it does present an element of some unknowns. You know, week to week, what happens in this league is you get a chance to look at usually a sample and sometimes a rather large sample of a coordinator's tendencies or a coordinator with the quarterback, that partnership and their tendencies. In this case, this will not only be a new head coach, but a new coordinator, a new play caller, and, linking up with a new quarterback in that relationship. So, won't have a lot to go on, so we'll have to do a really good job of trying to adjust as early as possible.
But you do have some to go on, and guys, they're very good on that side of the ball. Aaron Rodgers, of course, Hall of Famer. Garrett Wilson, who's dynamic. Breece Hall had a couple nice runs last year against you guys. How about the challenge of those specific skill players on that side?
Yeah, when you have that level of player, I mean, like you said, when you've got that level of quarterback in Aaron Rodgers and what he's able to do physically, mentally, and then when you have a receiver like that and Garrett Wilson, one of the tops in the game, and they certainly have a strong connection there, those two, and then their runner in the backfield, it causes some challenges to how much do you want to play with eight in the box to stop the run, and then how much do you have to, because then you're singled up on Garrett Wilson outside, so it leads for a tough dynamic.
And then finally, Coach, on the other side of the ball, I'm sure as a guy who has coached defense your whole life, I'm sure you have a healthy respect for what they've been able to do over the last several years, and here they are again at the top of the rankings.
Very talented defense. They've been really strong for a number of years, and a lot of, I would say, high draft picks, I believe, in the front, and they just roll them. They're very deep up front. And then with the corner positions, we talk about matchup being a matchup game. They've got a really good corner or two back there, so it leads to a tough matchup. So they do a great job defensively. We'll have to do a great job offensively and making sure that we're patient where we need to be patient.
All right, Coach, so walk through today and then a regular kind of a Friday practice on a Saturday with the different week, travel to New York on Sunday. Best of luck to you. Safe travels to New York, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sal.
All right, you got it. You got it. You too. That is Sean McDermott, head coach of the Buffalo Bills. I think the most notable thing he just said there, nobody is ruled out yet for the game. I didn't expect that to happen today, but we'll see where everybody goes. They could be ruled out tomorrow. Again, nobody's ruled out. It's not a normal Friday. This is like a normal Thursday. Tomorrow's like a normal Friday. Sean McDermott right there also talking about James Cook, Khalil Shakir, kind of these guys still working today. It is a walkthrough. Nobody's going to have a change, it appears, today in their injury designation for the week, for the day. So whatever you saw in yesterday's report, I'm guessing, will be pretty much what you see on today's report. That's Sean McDermott, and of course, his appearances in WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. We'll be back in a snap. It's time for a break. And of course, back in a snap is brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. And when we come back, John Scott, Channel 2, WGRZ-TV, sports director. Boy, it's a Channel 2 day. We're having the chief meteorologist on, Pat Hammer, in an hour from now. But John Scott joins me. We're going to do football. We're going to do hockey last night. We're going to do a little baseball with John Scott. Everything's on the table on a Friday here.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Trying to clear. Here's Byfield working a 2-on-1 potentially shot. Save made by Lukanen.
One of the moments of the game brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For the moments in your life, go forth to Firth.
Time now for Building the Bills, brought to you by Haynes Supply. From our Buffalo roots to nationwide sales and service, we are your industrial contractor supplier.
I'm going to tell you this because I'm a little closer to the situation than I should be, but I think there's a sneaky team that a lot of people aren't talking about that could come in late. I think it's going to pick up here.
Tell me this.
In the next few
days. Does in the next few days or weeks?
I'm going to say weeks.
Yeah. I don't have time for this. What? Does the sneaky team rhyme with Schmills? It does? Shoot, I'm so you're good. I'm so you're good.
That's Kay Adams with Marcel Reese, former Raiders fullback, on Davante Adams. He said weeks, not days, and the Bills are the sneaky team here.
I mean, that's good because every week, well, actually, it's good. Every week that passes, it's $1 million less that you have to put on your salary cap to trade for him.
Very well could just be that how much you want the Raiders to retain. Like, isn't that maybe it's $1 million less the Raiders retain every week? Although they're just spending it. So
they're spending it. The Bills. I know it was 2 weeks ago it would be $13 million, and that every week before the trade deadline it would go down $1 million. So right now maybe it's 11 for them to get him.
So here's my idea on building the Bills. You know, you could ask anybody out there, if you want Davante Adams, what's the price you're willing to pay? Right? Hasn't everybody asked that question?
Yes.
Hey, would you pay? Would you pay a second? I think you said ultimately you would. You'd pay
yes.
The Bills
I
have two seconds. And I want to think about it. I want to get a little creative on what they could pay if they want to go down this road. And maybe Brandon Beane's made calls to other teams about help on outside receiver. But when they needed Rasul Douglas, they got it done. And how did they do it? It was a pick swap.
Yep.
A third for Douglas and a fifth. We'll slide from the third to the fifth. We'll trade down The Bills traded down in the upcoming draft, and the price was Rasul Douglas. You get a starting corner for a pick swap.
Yep.
And pick swaps, you know, they happen. They never are treated like pick swaps. If you trade the Diggs trade, Diggs for a first and a fourth, I think the Bills get something back in that, like a seventh or something.
You're saying the original Diggs trade?
Yeah, the original one. Because often trades with other picks thrown in, you know, those picks are treated as such extra parts of the trade that they're not viewed as pick swaps. I feel like the Bills got a sixth in that trade or something.
Or they're not even mentioned.
Right.
They got a seventh round pick and gave up a first, a fifth, and a sixth.
Okay.
And a fourth. So it was Diggs and a seventh for a first, a fifth, a sixth, and a fourth.
Man, I don't even remember the fifth and the sixth.
Yeah.
Huh.
So four picks for Diggs.
Yeah.
Same thing, because what's it remembered as? It's just remembered as
first.
Diggs for the Jefferson pick.
Right.
That's it.
Yep. So, all right, you want to get Devontae Adams done. Let's get stupid. Not a full Let's Get Stupid segment, but if you called and offered the Raiders, I'll give you a second and a third, and you give me Adams and a fourth and a fifth.
Uh-huh.
It's two pick swaps.
Yeah.
You're the Raiders, now you're picking. You've moved two picks up two rounds. Now, I'm thinking about this in terms of dynasty trades. You know, you're trying to trade for somebody, what do you often do? Yeah. It's like, all right, listen, instead of, I still want to have some picks. And if you're Brandon Bean, he's loaded with draft picks going in. The Bills have an extra second. They're going to get a compensatory pick for Gabe Davis.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're planning on getting a compensatory pick, at least one. So, I'm thinking about a way to get Adams. I don't want to make it as simple as, I'll give you a second. I'm thinking about one way to build the Bills here, if they want to find a way to do it, is to pick swap.
Yeah. I like it. Can I throw out a potential hypothetical that would stop Bean from making a trade like that? That past examples might have you not believing this is the way it is, but let me just throw this out there. What if Bean doesn't want to trade a second round pick like that, or he doesn't want to trade a third round pick like that in any situation because he is stockpiling draft capital because he couldn't afford to go up and get a receiver last year, and now he wants the ability to do it? If he might think, all right, well, I could trade for Adams right now, and I could get him for a second. But next year's version of Malik Nabers, next year's version of Roma Dunze. Last year I wanted to do that, couldn't afford it. Now I want the extra pick to be able to do it. I want the extra picks.
What
is that possible?
Okay, I'll just ask it this way. What about it right now makes them able to afford it that they couldn't afford it last year? They had the extra second. Is it just the extra second is now in this year's draft?
Yeah.
And
you get another team to be more likely to take you seriously because, hey, we'll give you our first, and then we are going to give you 2 second round picks to move up however long.
And maybe a third because they get the compensation.
Well, it's possible. Again, it's possible. I don't want to say it's likely.
Well, hold on. I can give you an example of when the Bills did this. When did the Bills do that? They did it for quarterback.
Right, they did for Allen.
For Allen.
Trade they made for 12 months was about having enough picks in case they had to go up.
Right. And the year that they didn't take the quarterback, when it was, you know, Tyrod's the quarterback and Mahomes is there and Watson's there,
yep,
and they trade down, a lot of the questions were, why didn't you take a quarterback? Wasn't the time. The next year, they keyed in on the quarterback. Is it possible the Bills could do that? I don't think the toughest sell on this idea, Joe, is that they value the position importantly enough to do that.
To plan a year ahead?
Yes. Because, I don't know, they invest so much capital in defensive line.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've been fine there. I have a tough time believing they're going to plan a full year in advance to get a young receiver, especially when they just drafted one in the second round.
Yeah. Well, also, all the trade wins would tell you that they are at least open to the Adams trade. There is nobody out there that I've seen that has said, like, oh, no, the Bills are not doing this. The Bills are out on it. They're not considering it. Everything is, oh, no, they're being mentioned here. They've inquired. They are monitoring. Here's Marcel Reese, who said he predicted the Chase Young trade to San Francisco last year, saying, like, nope, they're the sneaky team, so keep an eye on the Bills. Like, nobody is here to tell me the Bills are just not into this idea at all. And they would know what it cost, right? Like, what's more likely? The Bills are snickering at the money, or that they're snickering at the price they'll have to pay to get him? Might be the money. The money might be the harder thing for them to accomplish.
In which case, can they make a trade sending someone out?
Tyler Bass. Sorry. I mean, that's the guy.
Yeah. 803-0550. The Raiders are making a quarterback change. I wonder how that plays into this, if at all. Aiden O'Connell's going in as their starter.
Yeah.
Maybe teams want to see Adams run again. Get him out there. Showcase him. Throw him the ball 10 times, and then I'll make a trade. Because he's missed games with a hamstring. So, 803-0550. You want to give us a call on the Davante Adams idea? Your vibe for Bills Jets? These injuries piling up. It really is an opportunity to kind of kill off the divisional race.
Oh my gosh, it would feel you'd be up, so over if they win this game.
What, two games with a tiebreaker on the Jets, and they're the only challenger in this division.
And you beat them at home?
Yeah. It really feels like...
You beat them in their home.
Yeah, for better or for worse, even though we're going to sit here and talk about goals bigger than the division, if they get this done against the Jets, it's like, okay,
oh, man.
The fifth straight.
It'll totally feel over. It'll totally feel like the Jets are two games back. You have the head-to-head ahead of them. You have a home game against them later in the year. I mean, I don't know. There will not be a team in this division I'll take seriously. I hardly already do take the Jets seriously for this, but if they win on Monday, you won't, you know, it'll be difficult to say that. I mean, if the Bills were to win this game on Monday, who's their bigger threat in the division? The Jets or the Dolphins? Because there is a looming Tua return, maybe even next week.
And they might win some games. Maybe.
Like, if they were... I mean, it'd be tough. They'd have to beat the Colts this week in Indy, and they got smoked by the Titans. Their only win without Tua is against New England, and even that was a struggle. No, it'll feel like the division's over. I'm not even gonna work to try to create, like, oh no, the Dolphins. No, the division will feel like it is completely over if the Bills win on Monday. That's where the game might be. You know, I talk about pressure. Maybe more. There's more pressure on the Jets to win this game than the Bills, because for the division at least, the Bills could lose this game. And where are you at? Okay, you're tied, right? You're tied in the division. You're both 3-3, and you have one more matchup against them, and it's at your own place. So you have a make good on that. Versus the Jets. The Jets have to win, because the Jets are gonna it's gonna feel like they're not in it if they find a way to lose this game on Monday.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
You want to trade someone back for Davante Adams? I'm looking right now. I don't think there is a... I think I named the only player. Like, the only player you could trade off your team right now that would create cap space for you, I think, is Tyler Bass. And that's it.
Right. And in that case, you're paying for a trade and paying them to take Tyler Bass?
Kind of.
Probably costs you more.
And then you'll replace him with some $800,000
kicker. That is one of the spots that's interesting here. Like, hey, Raiders, we need you to take $7 million cap. Like, no, we can't do that. Like, okay, well then we'll pay you less? I'd give you a second if you would take $7 million in cap. But since you won't do that, here's a third.
And we're going to give you a kicker?
I
think they already have a kicker?
Probably.
So I don't think it really fits.
I don't think Tyler Bass is getting traded.
I think they need to take salary on. I think you kind of need the Raiders to do that.
And they don't do that.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
But first time for everything.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. We will chat with Sal coming up at 8. We'll chat with Chris Brown. He'll be, of course, at MetLife Stadium. They'll both be at MetLife Stadium for the game on Monday night. And after Monday Night Football, you know, we can finally settle into Sundays at 1 o'clock. Well, I guess Seattle's coming up too, Sunday at 4 o'clock. But no primetime games for quite a long time. 803-0550, our phone number. Happy Football Friday, Jeremy.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Joe on WGR.
Joining us in studio, the Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas. Welcome, Thurman.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going good.
Going good.
You guys had a bang-up weekend last weekend with Marv there in Chicago. You want to give us your take on it? Not that the game was fun to watch at the end.
I could have watched the rest of the regular season in Chicago.
And we had a great time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll do it. I mean, I like Chicago. It was nice. That's kind of the first time I've kind of hung out down there and got to see a different side of it.
Let me just say this. Yeah. Imagine me sitting next to Daryl Talley and Thurman Thomas when the Bills didn't run the football in those last three plays inside.
My gosh. Did you have earplugs?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Did you hear what Marv said? Yeah. Marv was like, run it three times, play for overtime.
Yeah, three timeouts. Run it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're – hey, you know what? I mean, at that point, I think as Buffalo Bills fans and probably Sean McDermott – and those guys are probably thinking he's been off, but he can click at any time.
Josh.
But the odds of that happening, if you watch the entire game, I think you like, no, it's not going to happen.
And
we have to move
protection
on.
Protection was an issue, and they didn't have a back in the backfield on any of those three plays.
Here's what I get the first play going out. Let's see if we can get a drive started because you know we do have it.
Yeah,
if we get it started. He's on now, but it's got to happen on one. You got to give him one chance.
Right.
Once that goes incomplete on the sideline, it's like, all right, that's it. Then we're going to run it. We're going to try and grind out a first down with these last two, these second and third down.
Yeah,
punt it away.
Yeah, but you're still leaving them with what two timeouts.
Two timeouts. No. Because you'd run it, they'd call a timeout. You'd run it again, they'd call a timeout. So you'd leave them with one timeout.
They'd still have one.
Oh, so you're saying even with the pass play?
Yeah.
With
one first down pass. Then run.
First down pass, yeah, you still leave them with one timeout.
I'm running it. They ain't got no more timeouts when they get the ball.
And 60 seconds less of time.
Yeah. I'm running it. Sorry.
Yep.
And you know what? And up until that point, I mean, the first quarter, I thought I was like, oh my God, James Cook is going to get a career high of 30 carries. That's what I was looking at. And even at that point, I mean, it's one drive where he just gushed him for about, 20 yards and 30 yards in like three plays or whatever. And
early in the game, we were gashing him with the run game.
We were
7 yards of first down. And Brownie's been saying it all week that they've run the ball 20 out of 26 first downs. And one of the reasons they keep doing it is because James Cook is getting
yards.
5-plus yards a rush. And that's – I'm like, okay, go ahead.
So let's spin that forward to this week's game, Thurm. You know that the Jets are aware that the Bills have run it 20 of the last 26 times on first and 10 with some measure of success. Can the Bills use that tendency to their advantage and maybe work a little first down play action? You know. Jets defense comes downhill. They're aggressive.
Yeah, I know they're aggressive, but at this point, you got Sauce Gardner on one side, and I don't even know the other cornerback.
DJ Reed,
who's
really good.
Really good. I'm thinking they're probably going to go man-to-man and cover those guys and put eight men in a box. So it's going to force you to throw the football.
Okay.
I think that can do. I mean, Gardner can pretty much take away half the field anyway.
One of the problems with Gardner is that, and you've seen it, those two guys, DJ and Sauce, they're going to grab and hold you and just dare the officials to continue to call penalties.
They got six penalties last week.
Right.
They didn't care.
Reed had two DPIs. Sauce had a DPI, a defensive holding, and an illegal contact.
Yeah.
Because they were just mugging Jordan Jefferson and Jordan Addison and
Justin, you know what?
Jefferson, yeah. Justin
Jefferson. The league might be into a situation where, you know what, just let them play.
They will.
Well, let's hope not.
The officials just get tired of inserting themselves into the game. It's like they're human beings, and they just stop doing their job.
Even the one against the Jets and the Vikings. I mean, Stephon Diggs held the wide receiver for at least 7 yards when Aaron Rodgers threw him the interception. He held him for like 7 yards. So they're letting these guys play. Because like you said, I think they're sick and tired of, is it ticky-tacky or whatever?
Yeah.
There was nothing ticky-tack about what those guys were doing.
Right.
Because they're just clutching and grabbing. I mean, it looks like, early 2000s NHL hockey. They're just hanging all over these guys. And fortunately, Justin Jefferson is smart enough to kind of embellish a little bit. I've been spun around. The ball's not here. And he's going to draw a flag.
He's going to draw a flag.
Our guy's going to draw a flag. I don't know.
Yeah. It's going to be.
What do you make of the coaching change in New York and the offensive coordinator change? What's it mean?
Nothing really. Yeah. I don't think it means anything. I think Aaron Rodgers is not the quarterback everybody thought that he was going to come back and be amazing after this Achilles. I don't think it's there. The offensive line is not good. If the Bills get pressure like they got pressure, I don't know, like against Baltimore or something, Aaron Rodgers won't. I don't think he'll be effective.
He can't move enough to extend the play.
So now he's a drop back passer. He's not a scrambler like Tom Brady was that, but he had a great offensive line.
Yeah.
Now
it started today.
Offensive lines for Aaron Rodgers, and they had a running game. But they don't have any of that at New York. So even after a coach being fired, everybody's going to be fired up. It's Monday night. But I just don't think he has it anymore.
Okay, so you mentioned run game. How do you explain that? I mean, you've got Breece Hall and Braylon Allen, two talented backs, with versatile skill sets, and yet the Jets are last in the league in rushing, 80 yards a game. Is that a line issue also, as you see it? How are they that bad with talent that good in the backfield?
I think it's a line issue and it's a quarterback issue. I just cannot leave Aaron Rodgers out. I think it's both. Yeah. But I really do think it's a line issue. I mean, they haven't been able to protect them. They haven't been able to run the football. So, I think it's definitely a line issue.
Yeah, I mean, they've been without Morgan Moses the last 2 weeks. They've started the rookie, Olufoshinu, who hasn't done terrible.
Right.
And Tyron Smith is older than dirt on the other side.
And their first games were who? I can't remember who.
Okay. Their first games were
San Fran week one.
Right. Okay, San Fran week one. Yeah. So that right there was, oh boy.
It's a buzzsaw. Yeah.
I think they've been going against some pretty
Tennessee.
Tough teams.
They beat Tennessee and New England.
Their two wins are against
teams
that are
below 500. They lost against Denver and they got beat by Minnesota.
Denver's got a good defense.
Denver.
Well, it was 9-10.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I didn't say they had a good offense. All I said was they had a good defense.
I think we have a good defense.
Yeah.
I think we have a good defense. Yep. And if we come off the football, I mean, just, man, pressuring him.
Yeah.
Pressuring him. And look, Bernard made a heck of a difference coming in, right?
Yep. So let's look at that a little bit because it appears as though it's trending that Taron Johnson's going to come back this week. So now you've got the second level of your defense back to what it was in week one, Bernard, Williams, and Taron. How big a difference does that make, do you think?
I think it makes a huge difference. Can't wait till you throw Matt Milano in there.
Well, yeah, we might be waiting a little while.
Dorian Williams is playing well, too.
So, look, we've been able to get to 3-2. We're still first place in our division with most of our key guys injured. And we're getting those guys back. I think it's a wave in the NFL where this will happen to every single team. I mean, last year with Baltimore, it was Mark Andrews, the tight end.
Yep.
But Lindsey, Lightly, he picked up
the slack. Isaiah Likely.
Yeah, so I think it's a trend with all these teams early on, or some might be later in the year. You don't want that to happen. I guarantee you that, So I think with these guys getting healthier and, at the right time, we're not 1-4. It'll be different,
The Bengals are 1-4, and they're all injured.
Yeah, they're all
on defense, anyway.
And that trend probably will continue with them for the rest of the season because I think in the last couple of years they've been like 1-3, but made a run. I don't think they have the horses to do it.
It's gonna be hard. I mean, Cincinnati can't stop anybody. Burrow threw 5 touchdowns last week, and they lost.
And they lost.
I mean. That is not good.
That's not good, yeah.
Not good for Cincinnati.
Chase had, yeah. What, three or four of them? So, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, it's, give me an idea. This, you go into this game, and this is going to be a hostile environment.
Yeah.
The fans are going to be – the owner says winning starts now. Interim head coach. I mean, I've been telling him, the Jets have to win this game.
Pretty much.
Don't you think?
I think, yeah.
Well, the repercussions if they don't. I mean, it doesn't put them out of the division race per se, even though they would fall to 2-4.
Right.
Still got 11 games left. Like, a lot can happen, yeah. But the fans got the change they want. Hackett's out as play caller. Woody Johnson got what he wanted.
I don't know why he's still there, but go ahead.
Woody Johnson got what he wanted. He axed his head coach, which apparently he wanted to do at the end of last year. And Jets fans are like, here we go. We got what we wanted. Let's go. New day. And if they lose the game, right. They're just going to be like, oh, just end the season.
Just end the season.
Right. You know, because where are you then? Yeah. I mean, you made all the changes you want, and mm-hmm. It still didn't change, you know, yeah. The weekly outcome.
Yeah, and you know, the false narratives are going around. It's had something to do with Aaron Rodgers. Now they're calling him a coach killer, you know, well, Mike McCarthy.
Fired when he was up there.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a lot going on. And like you said, you know, if we go out there, we play really well and win this football game, you know what? All the pressure is on them now. It's not on us. I mean, it's pressure on us to win because I don't want to lose three in a row.
Right.
You know, so I think it's more pressure on them, less pressure on us. And, hey, man, it's Monday night. I know a lot of these guys haven't played on Monday night, man. It's one of the best opportunities for a player to showcase what they can do. And I know people around here, we've been talking about the Mac Hollis. We've been talking about, you know, Dawson Knox and all those guys, you know. And I'm sure those guys hear it, or maybe they don't hear it. But, you know, it's an opportunity to let everybody know I'm still here. I can make plays. I mean, I only have three or four catches, speaking of like Dawson Knox. But you know what? It's Monday Night Football. I've been here before. You know what? Let me have a good game. Let me step up and try to help this offense. But with the coaching staff and everything, he has to be on the field and have to call plays for him. So
probably.
And I don't know if that is going to happen because we got Kincaid. I mean,
yeah.
We still have him, okay? So, I mean, it's a good spot, but all these guys need to step up.
Yeah.
All right, we need to take a break here, but more with Thurman Thomas coming up next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned.
Birdie dancing, wide open, making the grab. Samuel, the tackle is missed. Devo off to the end zone. Touchdown 49ers, 76 yards.
Thursday Night Football starting the week, and it's the Niners getting a win. The Bills will play both those teams later in the year. San Francisco comes here. The Bills go to Seattle in a couple of weeks. Joining us on the Western Hotline, voice of the Buffalo Bills, play-by-play man Chris Brown, joining us ahead of Monday Night Football. Chris, good morning. Jeremy and Joe. We get another Sunday to sit back and kind of take it all in before the spotlight shines on the Bills.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a big one, guys, as far as early season matchups go. So it's going to be interesting to see how – I mean, you're expecting a pretty lively atmosphere down there. You know, Jets fans are hopeful now that they kind of got what they wanted, at least on the offensive side of the ball with – you know, Todd Downing taking over as the new offensive play caller, the quarterback's coach. That's what Jets fans have been pining for pretty much since Hackett's been there. And so Nathaniel Hackett takes the back seat on the offensive side of the ball, so they're expecting big changes and much better production on the offense for the Jets going into this one.
Yeah, Chris, both these teams need their quarterbacks to look a little bit better here. And, you know, the Bills passing game last week, it's not all on Josh Allen. It's guys not winning matchups. Maybe it's play calling. It's a storm of things. The thing that gives me confidence in this game is I just, even though the Bills offense might have a bunch of injuries, I have more faith in Allen right now than I do in Aaron Rodgers, who does not look the part that he's looked in through most of his career. But both these guys do need to find answers to what's been going on with their offense.
Yeah, that's right. And really, the problem for the Jets, which I think runs a little bit deeper, is the fact that they haven't been able to get their running game on track, last in the league in rushing, which kind of stupefies me a little bit with the talent they have in their backfield, not only with Breece Hall, but his backup, Braylon Allen. who looks like he's going to be a player in this league as well. And I'm expecting Todd Downing to pound the run early in an effort to try to take some of the burden off of Rodgers, knowing he's not as effective an off-script playmaker as he was when he was younger, not to mention the fact that he comes in a little nicked up with knee and ankle injuries, respectively, limited in practice this week. So I think it's going to be incumbent upon the Jets to get the run game going just to kind of balance them out a little bit offensively and take the burden off of Rodgers.
And what's been interesting is Breece Hall's had such a down year, Chris. Like, he's got big runs even against the Bills last year, but he kind of has been outplayed by the rookie, Braylon Allen. I don't know if they'll go to Allen as, like, the starter, but Hall has not really struck a lot of fear into anybody yet this season.
Right, and that's been mentioned to the Bills players this week, and Terrell Bernard was saying the other day, all I know is he ripped off 127 on us, so I'm taking him pretty seriously. So they're not buying into that at all. And I think they are a capable running team. For whatever reason, their offensive line has kind of let them down. They're not getting to the second level effectively. And I'm encouraged that the Bills front can slow them down because they have good edge setters and Smoot and Rousseau and Epinesa, and they have fast athletic linebackers, which is what you need against these two 220-pound backs. So I'm hoping that the gap integrity is good. I thought it was good for the most part last week. You got to hope that gets even better this week against two guys that are eminently more talented than the backups they were facing last week with the Texans.
We see it almost every year. You know, the Bills' defense suffers injuries, and different guys can come in and shine and show what they've got. And Dorian Williams might be the guy for this, a tackling machine. And, you know, for a matchup against a Jets team that's probably going to try and commit to the run, sure, the Bills got taken for a lot of yards against Baltimore, but I just don't know if any other team's going to be able to do it to the Bills the way that Baltimore did that day.
Yeah, you would hope, right? I do find it interesting that, you know, you got two big body backs with speed in the Jets, you know, Allen and Hall. And are they as close to Henry as you're going to see in a while? Maybe. I don't know that the Jets are as an effective and buttoned up blocking unit as the Ravens are, so you're encouraged by that. And just to talk about Dorian Williams a little bit, you know, I think he's a guy that has effectively set a physical tone for this team on defense each and every week. This guy is, you know, smacking the teeth out of people. And I got to believe Taron Johnson back. That's another valuable piece you've added back to the second level of your defense. So now you've got Bernard, Williams, and Johnson, and I think you feel a whole lot better about the operation as a whole.
Operations offensively for the Bills, whether it's 12 personnel, Dawson Knox getting reinvolved, it feels like with all the injuries, I mean, maybe no James Cook, maybe no Khalil Shakir, Allen's going to have to find guys. You know, everybody has taken a couple of hits the last 2 weeks, but this is a spot where they're going to have to find guys down the depth chart that will get gains for them, however they do it. Maybe that means more run for Keon Coleman. Maybe it means somebody that, you know, is an unlikely hero, but Josh is going to have to find somebody to work for him.
That's right, and I think it's going to be incumbent upon Joe Brady to try to find ways to facilitate separation early in the down, because I think we can all agree that based on what the Bills have done against the blitz the last 2 weeks has probably opened some eyes across the league amongst defensive coordinators. Blitzing, Josh, used to be suicide. But now, because separation has been a problem for the receiving core, and because Josh has not taken some of the easy throws the last 2 weeks, he looks seemingly ineffective against the blitz. I think he's 5 for his last 16 for 34 yards, and he's been sacked 4 times, and he has 1 touchdown. I mean, those are eye-opening numbers. And so I'm expecting the Jets to be aggressive. Now, they don't have to blitz a whole lot. I mean, they're 4th in the league in sacks, and they don't blitz a whole lot. And Will McDonald leads the AFC in sacks with 6 coming off the edge for them. So I am expecting them to turn up the heat on Josh and challenge this offense to make plays in the face of blitz pressure. Interestingly enough, the Jets offense has had just as much problem against the blitz. I mean, Minnesota blitzed the hell out of Rodgers last week to the tune of 3 interceptions, including a pick 6. So I'm very curious to see what the defensive approaches are to try to slow these offenses down.
Do you think we're going to end up with a low-scoring game with all this being said? Because it does feel like the defense might have an advantage over the offense, maybe even on both sides of the football.
I wouldn't rule it out. You know, all you need are a couple of defensive penalties. And I actually mentioned this in my six things to watch for this week on BuffaloBills.com because the Jets have adopted Baltimore's approach defensively, which is basically clutch and grab on every single play and dare the officials to throw flags. Now, to the officials' credit, last week between the Jets and Minnesota, they did throw flags. They've been called for the second most defensive penalties in the league, the Jets have. And they rank third in most defensive passing penalty yards and fourth in defensive pass interference penalties. They've got five already. They got flagged six times on defense. DJ Reed, Sauce Gardner, both getting rung up for like two or three penalties each. And the good news, guys, is Adrian Hill is the officiating crew, Adrian Hill's crew on Monday night. And his officiating crew has thrown the third most flags so far this season.
Yeah, Jefferson in that London game was all first half. Like, these guys are just grabbing me on every play. So we saw that happen in London. It does. It's even if this game is an ugly win, Chris. Like, the opportunity here for the Bills, it already kind of feels like this. But man, if you can go up two games in the division and win the head to head in their building. I mean, we'll talk about receivers and we'll talk about like holes that they might still have, but man, the division is going to feel over, I think, if they win this game on Monday.
Yeah, you'd like to feel like you can gut this one out. I just caution everybody, the Jets are the number two defense in football, and the first meeting down there is seemingly a slog every single time. They make you earn every single yard. They've consistently held the Bills below their point total. Average point total in that building. So it never seems to be easy against that Jets defense, especially in the first meeting every season. And, you know, you have to throw in the fact that it might be a little harder for Buffalo's defense knowing you've got a brand new play caller calling this thing in Todd Downing this week.
Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. Chris, thanks. We'll chat Tuesday after the game.
All right, take care, guys.
Yeah, have a good weekend. Jeremy and Joe with you. It is Football Friday, and our appearance, our chat with Chris Brown, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women. When we return, a very fast, fun game, as I ask Joe and Josh, who has been described as, quote, I'm reading social media. I've never seen such vitriolic hatred toward a guy. Who is getting more vitriolic hatred than anyone in the history of social media or the world? According to Michael Kay. That's up next.
Back in prime time this week, for now anyway.
It's about time. These 1 o'clock Sunday games are killing me.
I'm so bored by 1 o'clock Sunday kickoffs. Man, let's go back 10 years and see what we sound like about that.
Like a bunch of.
Can I just have a Thursday night?
We sound like a bunch of babies.
Can I just have a Thursday night game against Jacksonville once, please? Can the Bills just qualify for that? But now it's like, oh, I got to stay up. So Tuesday morning, we're going to be dragging. It's easier when they win. This is, I was about to say, at least for now, though, the Bills' last game of the season that is not on a Sunday. There's no more Monday night unless flexing, you know, to Saturday or whatever. Sal always knows a lot about that. But Sal, at least the regular schedule here, no more Thursdays, no more Mondays. Still some night action down the road, but it'll get a little bit more casual here, to put it one way.
Yeah, for sure. We Matt Bovey and I just recorded an Always Game Day Buffalo podcast, and we talked about that this week, which is like, man, I remember... You know, we all do, right? Like when, wow, the Bills are going to be on prime time. It was such an event just to have a prime time game. And now we're kind of prime time fatigue in a lot of ways. You never want to complain about being good. That's the that's what happens when your team is good. But it becomes a grind. It becomes, you know, difficult for a lot of people, for fans, people like us who cover the team in a lot of different capacities. So I think that, you know, after this week, it's nice to know it's much more routine. Now there are 4 p.m. or 4:25 p.m. Eastern time games on Sundays. That gets thrown in there. But, yeah, only Sunday, nothing on Monday unless there's some sort of flex down the road.
And you might be ready to say, Bulldog, about the Jets' version of this. Because they had night game week one, Thursday night week three.
On the road.
In week one, yes. Week five, they go to London. Then there's this game. Next week, Sunday night, on the road. Week nine, Thursday night. Two Thursday nights.
Right.
Week 11, Sunday night as well. And then calmness. Yeah.
The start especially, I think, you know, not that we are here to have any sympathy for the Jets, but I think they got worked at the first, like, six, 7 weeks of the season, like Mike just laid out.
Yeah, and I also want to point out the schedule in general for the Bills, the teams they play, right? Which is, like, we all recognized that the first six games were going to be pretty difficult. And look, if they, this is a big game for that swing of 3-3-4-2. I think we probably had a discussion at some point, on the show, that, hey, would you take 4-2 through the first six? Yeah, you know what? Sounds pretty good. I think you could go with 4-2, and you feel pretty good about yourselves looking ahead. And look, if they could get to 4-2, guys, I mean, the next four games are very winnable for the Buffalo Bills. In fact, so much so that I would expect them to win at least three, and if something, unless something goes wrong, I think they should win all four games. Like, you're in a position, if you win this week, I think you're looking at 8-2 as very doable.
I asked Bulldog the other day if he would take 6-4 from here, Sal, and he said no. You would say no?
I'd say no. I think you have a much better look at 7-3 at worst.
Okay. Well, the Jets, I mean, the Jets are the Bills are interesting. The Jets are the bigger story. The Jets maybe are the biggest story in the league right now with the coaching change and the play calling move. They have not cleared, well, sorry, they have cleared 266 total yards once this year. That's that New England game in week three. You know, say what you want. That was total domination. What are the Bills getting here? There's the emotional stuff where you could look at that either way, I guess. Do you see them as a team that's about to start rolling offensively, or is it more likely that that's just not going to happen?
Well, let's just hope that doesn't happen Monday night to start them rolling offensively. I do think there's a pathway for that to happen. I do. I think there's a path for them to start playing better offensively. I don't know what rolling means for them, though. Like, what's that bar? What's that perspective, right? Because they've just been pretty bad on offense. And I just don't know if their offensive line is good enough for them to be rolling offensively. They do not have a quarterback who can kind of really mask that, because Aaron Rodgers, as much as actually he looked pretty mobile the first couple of weeks, he's been getting beat up. And he looks now more like the 40-year-old quarterback coming off an Achilles injury. He wants to get rid of the ball quickly, and I think that's contributing to some of the bad throws, the not seeing guys, the interceptions. He's getting beat up pretty badly back there. They cannot run the football. But here's what I expect on Monday night. They're making a change here to Todd Downing. Now, granted, he was in Tennessee when they had Derrick Henry, so it's a little bit different. But I think they're going to commit to running the ball on Monday night and try. Mm-hmm. They're going to try and pound it at the Bills. The Bills are the last ranked run defense in the league as far as yards allowed per play. They ran the ball well against the Bills last year. They have Breece Hall. They have Braden Allen. I think that they're going to do what they can to pound the ball at the Bills and then say, now you have to, if we can, and you're getting, you know, 4 yards a carry, 5 yards a carry here, now we can get in second and manageable, and now Aaron Rodgers, now you have to be ready for everything. And that's what kind of worries me now. I think overall, big picture, though, it's tough for me to see them sustaining having a really good offense, because I do think their offensive line has issues.
Yeah, and we've seen Rodgers not really be on the same page with the receivers a lot. I'm with you 100%, Sal. For all the talk about the passing game coordinator is taking over the play calling and the fired head coach and all the stuff, yeah, I feel like I'm bracing for 35 rush attempts between Breece Hall and Braylon Allen in this game. Because, unless, of course, you know, the game gets away from them or they just can't do it. But, you know, the Bills have gotten run on, so we'll see. I mean, something's got to give here, right? The Jets haven't been good at doing it. The Bills haven't been very good at stopping it. So I think they'd be nuts, considering especially Rodgers is nursing a regular, like, they have to classify it, low ankle sprain.
Oh.
And is already, you know, can't really move that well to begin with the exception, I would say, of that New England game. That's the one game out of the five where I went, oh, God, what happened here? He looks like, you know, Aaron Rodgers from 2010.
I had under 2.5 rushing yards for Aaron Rodgers in that game. Like, at least I've got kneel downs to save me if somehow he runs for 4 yards and he ran for like 12 right away.
Right.
Like, that one I could have just gone to bed.
Right. So, yeah, I think the running the ball, like, and that's, you know, Sal at Oliver Sullivan in practice this week. I feel pretty pessimistic about him playing. So we'll see what kind of job the Bills can do if the Jets do try to, you know, smack them.
Yeah, it looks unlikely for Ed Oliver to play at this point from my perspective. We'll see tomorrow if he gets ruled out of the game. He hasn't practiced, of course. Today is only, you know, like a normal Thursday, so we have one more day for that. We'll see what Sean McDermott, you know, and today he didn't rule anybody out. But Dwayne Carter, we've talked about him, did a nice job. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Can he back it up for another game like that? I'd love to have Ed Oliver for this reason. Everything we just talked about with Aaron Rodgers, which is his maybe lack of mobility and being banged up. If you can pressure him from the interior, where's he going, right? Is he going to try to get to the outside? Is he going to try and, you know, roll out to make some plays? That's not necessarily Dwayne Carter's game, but he had a couple of nice plays like that. We'll see if he can maintain that. I do believe, though, guys, that this game here is a game where the Buffalo Bills defensive line has to step up. I mean, they impacted the second half C.J. Stroud a little bit more. They really didn't impact him as much in the first half. There were a few times they got close. They just weren't able to get him. But Greg Rousseau, A.J. Epinesa, DeJuan Smoot, who had the nice play to cause the fumble. Like, I just think these guys should be able to beat the Jets' offensive line, and they need to do that. And that's not just getting to Aaron Rodgers. That's stopping the run as well, which obviously helps to have Terrell Bernard back, and it looks like Taron Johnson back.
How about Cook and Shakir? So what changes? We've had Shakir out for a game already, but Cook, I know I asked you this yesterday about him. What do you think they would do? This idea that the Jets will want to run it, I've said the same thing too, and they have just not been effective at all. You see, like, Breece Hall has two broken tackles this season through 5 weeks. Like, they're just gang tackling him at the line of scrimmage. He had 4 yards against Denver and 23 or something against Minnesota. So there's that side of the ball. The Bills, you know, this season started very successfully with Cook being a really important piece, and this will be their first game without him. He didn't play all the time as a rookie, but he has not missed a game to injury, I believe. So what kind of an adjustment would be needed?
Well, first of all, I just think that, you know, running the football in the NFL, we've talked about this over the years. Like, a lot of times you can just kind of plug somebody in, right? It's not as much of a drop-off as a lot of other places, you know, around the roster. It's just, you know, yeah, it's nice to have a dynamic running back and things you can do. I think what you do lose from James Cook is that flexibility for them to be aware of him coming out of the backfield, catching passes. But you have Ty Johnson, who's got nice hands. Ray Davis can catch the ball. It's not necessarily his game, but he can do something like that. But I think you could still be okay with, you know, going to a Ty Johnson, Ray Davis, you know, type of attack. You know, you hit the hole straight hard. These guys run hard. I think they can pick up the tough yards that you want. You can do things like that. I think Khalil Shakir is much bigger of a piece if you're missing him. If it's the choice between the two, yes, James Cook. I think on the surface, oh my God, they can't deal without James Cook. But what we saw last week, guys, just tells me, like, Khalil Shakir is such a big part of what they do. It just opens other things up. He is able to get open himself. He's able to kind of navigate those spots in the middle of the field. They haven't controlled the middle of the field. They really want to control the middle of the field. I think Khalil Shakir not playing just puts a lot more pressure on those wide receivers to get open on the outside. And as we've talked about, teams are just banking on the fact that they just cannot do that.
Yeah. Sal, it dawned on me earlier today that, of course, we know Shakir missed the Houston game. He was hurt early in the Baltimore game, and I know he still made a big play in it, but like, they couldn't really do much through the air except for that long play and then a couple of back shoulders to Coleman. And Shakir was not, you know, 100% there. So I think that's a really big miss. It might sound crazy to have gotten there already, but I think he's a security blanket for Allen, and not having it is really tough.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, just the way that the chess pieces move around, right? If you're a defensive coordinator, your defense, Khalil Shakir in the middle of the field gets you a little more attention. You know that he can kind of navigate his way there. You know, if you don't have him there, who are you putting there? And what does that put? It doesn't stress the defense as much, I think. So now
visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com to get started today.
Buffalo Bills. You know, and for me, I think Dalton Kincaid has to be big there too. And if you don't have Shakir, you know, you still have Dalton Kincaid who can be a part of that. But when you put those two together, that, again, it helps you control the middle of the field. I think the Bills have really tried to do that. They've wanted to do that. It just for some reason hasn't come to fruition this year as much. Maybe, you know, you go back the first 3 weeks, we can look at the numbers, but especially the last 2 weeks, they've had nothing, you know, in the middle of the field. Now, part of that is Josh Allen is scrambling left or scrambling right. So he's, you know, trying to find something on the boundary as much as possible. They have to get back to being able to throw to the middle of the field effectively.
With Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline, Mike Shope and the Bulldog Football Friday. Well, let's take that a little bit further. generalizing, the idea here with Josh Allen on the Bills, still in his prime, presumably, was that they can withstand these losses at wide receiver, be they off-season departures or an injury. And they are 3-2. I believe they have the best point differential in the AFC through 5 weeks. So it's not all bad, but 9-for-30 last week. What can Allen do about this, Sal, that, you know, if he has to scramble and nobody's open because they can't separate, then you have problems. But to some extent, I wanted to think, and so did a lot of us, that it wouldn't break them if they couldn't get open, and, you know, even if the offensive line wasn't perfect. So what about Allen's sort of responsibility in this?
Let's first be clear. Josh Allen did not play a good game on Sunday. I want to start this by saying that. Like, I'm not defending his play in any way. He was 9-for-30, and he just did not play well. The timing was off. He was not very good. I do think, though, that a lot of the things that are happening are really outside of his control, and he's kind of put in a circumstance where he's trying to make a play, and maybe that's where it comes from, guys, which is, yes, he's trying to make, maybe he's trying too hard to make a play instead of just, hey, you see something coming, a hot read, right? Like, but look, Keon Coleman didn't help him out. A little hot read, there's a little slant, things like that. I think that's what Josh can do. I think it's incumbent upon the quarterback here to make sure everybody's on the same page, communication. Hey, if they're going to do this to us, I can throw it to you right off the line of scrimmage. I think about what the Texans did. Those two plays, one in the beginning of the game, one near the end of the game, which we thought was going to win it for the Texans. It didn't, where literally they had the running back leak out of the backfield and just replace the hot guy, right? Replace the blitzer. Like, things like that. These are things that Josh Allen needs to be on the same page with his running backs, with his wide receivers, these hot reads, instead of what we've seen the last 2 weeks is, okay, they're pressing, here comes the coverage, bam, I got to scramble, I got to run, I got to find something, I got to do something. I think earlier in the down, being able to recognize, get the ball out of the hands, find somebody, but that's incumbent upon everybody. And then I also think that he's got to use his legs a little bit more in those situations. You know, running to the sidelines and, you know, getting and running out of bounds in straight parallel versus, hey, you know what, if I could just take off upfield for 2-3 yards, live to fight another down, that might be a little bit better here. I thought there were a couple of times he could have done that last week. He didn't do that. It seems like everything for the last 2 weeks, especially last week, everything's just speeding up, guys. Everything's speeding up for everybody, and they're just not kind of, you know, taking control of making sure they get to where they need to get a little bit earlier after the ball is snapped.
Looking at some good news on the injury front this week, Taylor Rapp clearing concussion protocol. Would you expect he just goes straight in for Bishop, or might there be a mix there with the three, with Bishop, Hamlin, and Rapp?
I think he just goes straight in for Bishop. You know, listen, we all saw last week Cole Bishop had a couple of plays he would definitely want back, and certainly the one in the past game. He also had a couple of runs where he reminded me like Dorian Williams last year, just out of control, not breaking down, missing the tackle. Those things will come in time. He'll understand. The game just moves so much faster from the college level, the NFL level, and from preseason to the regular season. When you're in there in that situation, you just have to learn to kind of keep your body under control. I think Dorian Williams has done a nice job of that over the last couple of years. Cole Bishop will too. He also had another couple nice plays of setting the edge. He did a really nice job. That's his game, coming downhill, making those tackles. But I think from what they saw from Cole Bishop, what they know they can get from Taylor Rapp, what he's done, to me it just seems like he's going to go in there, he's going to be the guy. And can we say at all that DeMar Hamlin's really hurt this team at all? I don't know if I can say that. I don't think he has. I think DeMar Hamlin's been fine. Now, he had one interception. He's not a guy that's going to be making plays on the football all the time. That's just not his game. But I think DeMar is exactly kind of what they want out of a safety in this particular scheme. He doesn't have the same athletic ability as Micah or Jordan or even Taylor Rapp or Cole Bishop. But what he does is he knows the system and he understands how to keep things in front of him. And maybe one of these times he's going to get beat deep. But right now, I think they're comfortable having DeMar Hamlin right there.
Garrett Wilson, the Bills secondary's biggest challenge, I would think, maybe pretty easily. 23 targets last week.
Man.
This was not a double overtime playoff game. This was a London game that ended in regulation. 23 targets. Wilson made a great catch in last year's opener for a touchdown at the Meadowlands, which you'll remember, MetLife Stadium. So what about...
That was on Trey White.
Yeah.
Okay. What about him here? Like, it seems like we're hearing all the time and even seeing that he and Rodgers are missing connections, but that those 23 targets got him double-digit catches and 100 yards and a score last week.
Well, they just kept feeding him, and you know he's their number one guy. Alan Lazard is dropping a lot of passes. He has decent numbers, but he's dropping a lot of passes. It just doesn't seem like it's very consistent from him. And outside of those two guys, really, they don't have a lot there, right? I mean, that's really the guy that they're trying to get the ball to. Right?
Oh,
what's that?
Big Mike. Mike Williams.
Big Mike doing nothing.
Yeah, Big Mike Williams. There you go. Listen, guys, I think you know of all the things that have kind of gone wrong for the Bills, I think a couple things, one thing you can really look at that's been going right is their corner play. I mean, Christian Benford has been outstanding this season. I think he's playing at an all-pro level. And Rasul Douglas has been really good. Can you pick apart a few plays where the guys, maybe one or two here that they've been beat? But, man, they're so different. We've talked about this, you know, that Douglas is such more an aggressive player where Benford is more of a conservative player, but it really works for both of their games. And I think it works for the defense because, you know, they're not traveling, and I don't expect them to do that here. They don't have to do that here. But you got one of each kind of guy here. They're both very, very high IQ football players. So, if you know, for all the things that kind of have gone a little bit wrong here, those are two guys that are playing at a really high level, and I think especially Benford, what he's doing. So I think the Bills are comfortable, you know, going against this group. Not saying, oh, my God, they're going to go out there and shut him down easily, but I don't think they're afraid of anybody right now at wide receiver because they know that they have a couple of guys out there who are really doing a nice job.
I think I would like Douglas's chances of getting a pick here against Rodgers.
Yeah.
Like he's
former teammate.
Former teammate. I mean, they have a lot of time together, but still, I feel like that's a guy. He to the way Rodgers is playing right now, I feel like Douglas is just going to be ready to pounce in this game.
And he is from the area. He's from New Jersey. He is, where is he from? East Orange, maybe? I got to look that up. You guys can look it up if you have it there. Let me see. I think it's from East Orange. Let me look real quick. East Orange, New Jersey. I got it right.
Good job.
I'm not good at New Jersey.
He said this week.
I'm not good at New Jersey. I think Atlantic City is south. I can't do New Jersey.
Yeah. I'm not even sure where the Sopranos live.
It's such a small state. Everything's near each other, right? Everything's within walking distance in New Jersey, by the way.
Sort of. All right. That's a stretch.
But anyway, he's got, I think he said this week, at 26 ticket requests already. Like, a lot of family and friends come in. So, yeah, you add in what you just said about former teammate and Aaron Rodgers, and then I'll add in, like, hometown. A lot of people come in Monday Night Football. You know he's going to be jacked up and want to make a play in this game.
Tom's River. His down a ways. I don't know. I've never been good at Jersey. Sal, well, you're going there, so you're the one that needs to know Jersey. Thank you for your time today, and we'll talk Monday.
All right, guys. Looking forward to it. Have a great weekend.
Oh, wait. Will you go to the Sunday night game?
Yeah.
Mike brought this up the other day. Will you go see Bengals Giants, or you got, like, big fancy dinner plans somewhere?
Well, maybe not big fancy dinner plans. You know, this is a Bill Wippert, Sal Capaccio trip. We always hang out in Manhattan together, right?
Okay.
When we go out, you guys know, he's my traveling buddy. We love to go to Manhattan. So where we stay, it's not far of a ride to go in the subway to go into Manhattan. We love walking around, going to Times Square, grabbing a slice of pizza. Sometimes we go to an Italian restaurant. We like to hang out. We do that. I will tell you guys, last year, the same thing happened. Remember, the Cowboys played the Giants Sunday night, week one. The Bills played the Jets Monday night, week one, right? I am not going to go into East Rutherford. I'm not going to go to that game. There's just no reason to. It's a little bit off the beaten path. I don't have necessarily big dinner plans, but we'll have plans.
All right, good.
You did not go to the Dallas Giants game, which was unfortunate because it was 40-0. You missed a lot.
Yeah, that's
right. You missed a lot from Dallas. Yeah. 40-0 on Sunday Night Football last year.
And I will say, I will be keeping tabs, of course, on the Yankees game one of the ALDS, which is the same time as the Bills and Jets game.
Right.
Can you go to that? Well, not if you're going. No. Could you get away with it? Could you?
Nah,
is there any way you could get away with it?
No,
AI sale on the sidelines.
I don't see him down there. I hear him. He's getting information. That could still be possible. Anyway, yeah, too bad they didn't line up differently.
All right, well, enjoy your trip, Sal. Safe travels, and I'd say go Yankees, but it would be insincere.
Hey, I totally get it. I understand. But you know what? Hopefully this weekend, my one hope is, you know, you go a lot more innings here. Game five for the, they use up a lot of bullpen, you know, for the Tigers. They go a lot of innings, and then, you know, the Yankees don't have to face as many guys.
Here's hoping.
Sounds good, Sal. Safe travels. All right, there's Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Yeah, Monday in New York. Are the Mets playing Monday too? I think they're
they will play on the road.
Right, but they're like afternoon maybe or yep. something, mm-hmm. and then you got the Yankees, you got the Jets. I think the Rangers are home Monday night too. Yeah, I mean, I know it doesn't really hardly count.
You know, people say there's a shortage of things to do in New York City.
They do, huh?
You're sounding like maybe they're wrong, those people who say that. We've got time for your calls here, 803-0550, your confidence level, Bills at Jets Monday night, maybe a little strategy, what you'd like to see them do more of or do better. At 6, we'll have picks, but we've got time before that. Football Friday continues. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.